How's it going, everybody? You're listening to The Raven's Grove. I'm your host, Dahi, and this is another themed episode of Random Factums. But more specifically, this episode is going to be about one of my favorite franchises, the Scott Pilgrim franchise. Now, before I go any further, this episode of The Raven's Grove features major spoilers for the following piece of media. The Scott Pilgrim franchise, including, but not limited to, the original six comics, the live-action film released in 2010, and the Netflix anime released in 2023. As well as the following trigger warnings: sexual mentions, infidelity mentions, pedophilia mentions, physical combat mentions, mind control mentions, and superpower mentions. So if any of those are in any way an issue for you, please give this episode a miss. Okay, now those are out of the way, let's get out of the show on the road. Now, before we get into the facts, we need to establish who or what the Scott Pilgrim franchise actually is. Well, it all started in 2005 with a series of indie comic books created by Canadian author and illustrator Brian Lee O'Malley. The original Scott Pilgrim comics ran from 2005 to 2010, and they are comprised of six different volumes. In order, they are Volume 1, Scott Pilgrim's Precious Little Life; Volume 2, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World; Volume 3, Scott Pilgrim and the Infinite Sadness; Volume 4, Scott Pilgrim Gets It Together; Volume 5, Scott Pilgrim vs. the Universe; and Volume 6, Scott Pilgrim's Finest Hour. Now, surprising everyone, the comics were actually a massive hit, and so far, there have been four different adaptations of the comics. As I mentioned earlier, there was the live-action film, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, which came out in cinemas back in 2010. There was the video game, which was also released in 2010 alongside the movie. The animated short, Scott Pilgrim vs. the Animation, which explores the main character's backstory, also released in 2010. And that actually features some of the cast from the live-action film reprising their roles in voice acting. And most recently, we have the Netflix anime, Scott Pilgrim Takes Off, which was released as a Netflix streaming exclusive back in 2023. The franchise revolves around the titular Scott Pilgrim, a slacker and part-time musician who lives in Toronto, Canada, plays bass in the indie rock band Sex Bob-omb with his friends, and is dating a 17-year-old high school student called Knives Chow while recovering from a very traumatic breakup. Now, I want to make something very clear right now. In Canada, the official age of consent is 16 years old. That means that Scott Pilgrim is not breaking any laws by dating Knives while she's 18, and contrary to what you might hear online about this franchise does not engage in, nor does it condone, pedophilia in any way, shape, or form. According to Scott himself in the comic, they never engage in sexual activity, and the most intimate thing Scott and Knives ever did was when Scott and Knives kissed, and both of them agreed that it was a bad idea. That being said, like I said earlier, both the comic and the characters in the comic strongly disapprove of this relationship with Knives. And Scott himself admits that he's dating Knives because it is easy, not because he actually likes her. And for her part, Knives is head over heels in love with Scott, which is just... Well, for me personally, I agree that a 22 to 23 year old guy going out with a high school girl is not okay in any situation, even if the girl is over the age of consent and the relationship is 100% consensual. It's just... it's a bit too skeevy for me, and unfortunately there is, well, it's led to a fair bit of backlash against the franchise online by people who accuse Scott of engaging in inappropriate behavior when this is not the case, and it never has been the case in the comics. Anyways, into Scott's life, rollerblades American expatriate Amazon.ca delivery girl Ramona Flowers, the literal girl of Scott's dreams, and Scott starts cheating on Knives with Ramona. On their first date, Scott discovers that Ramona possesses superpowers, and unfortunately for Scott, in order to date Ramona, he must first defeat her seven evil exes, all supervillains of some degree, who have similar powers and abilities to Ramona. In Book 6, it's revealed that all of the exes are being manipulated into targeting Scott in combat by Ramona's most recent ex, Gideon Graves, which forces both Scott and Ramona to come to terms with their respective pasts, relationships, and behaviors. Now, I'm a massive fan of the comic. I've seen the film. I love the film. I've not seen the anime, but I know a bit about it. I've seen clips online, and I love this franchise. So, now that you know enough to understand the franchise, our first fact is about the creation of the comic itself. So, like I mentioned earlier, Brian Lee O'Malley, who was the creator of Scott Pilgrim as a character and was the author and illustrator of the comics, he has gone on record as saying that the character is directly inspired by the song Scott Pilgrim by the Canadian indie rock band Plumtree. Now, Plumtree was formed in 1993. And they're around for about 7 years in the 90s before officially disbanding in, I think, August of 2000. The song Scott Pilgrim is actually in both the film and the anime, and not only that, the character Scott Pilgrim wears a plum tree shirt in both the comics and the film. By the way, if you don't know the song, go look it up on YouTube or Spotify. It's got a very 90s indie rock feel, but in a really good way. It's actually a really good song. I personally enjoy it. So, yeah, I know it's a bit out of my wheelhouse. Normally, I talk about how I like metal music, but this is actually a song that I reckon that if you are looking to get into rock music, this is a pretty good way to start. So, yeah, maybe give it a try. Fact number two is actually about how the original comic looked. See, if you go to a comic book shop or to your local library, like I did, to get a copy of the Scott Pilgrim comics, you'll probably find them in color. However, the original run of the comics is actually in black and white. You see, according to O'Malley, this is predominantly because that printing them on black and white was way cheaper than in color, and as the original estimate for number of copies sold in total was only 1,000 copies at all, this makes some degree of sense. Now, like I said, this was a massive hit. No one was expecting it to... They were expecting it to sell maybe 1,000 copies. It sold in the millions, and that's when they knew they had the massive hit on their hands. However, there's another reason for it being in black and white. You see, O'Malley said that at the time, he wanted to write a shonen-style comic book series, although he'd only read one series at a time, which was Ranma Half, I think that's pronounced. In the early 2000s, Japanese manga had not yet achieved significant popularity in North America. O'Malley gained inspiration from the book Even a Monkey Can Draw a Manga by Koji Aihara and Tenkaro Takakuma. In 2002, O'Malley's roommate, who worked at a comic book store, brought the book to him while O'Malley was working on the comic series Lost at Sea and was planning Scott Pilgrim. Upon reading the book, O'Malley realized that despite the satirical tone, it could actually be an effective guide as to how the manga industry worked. O'Malley said that Ranma Half was the strongest influence, and Atsuko Nakajima, the character designer of the Ranma Half anime and other anime series, was a major influence to a lesser extent. He added that the, quote, exploded page layouts, end quote, of Kudelka, a work by Juji Iwahara, I think that's how it's pronounced, directly influenced the, quote, full bleed layouts, end quote, of Scott Pilgrim. O'Malley said that Osamu Tezuka began influencing his work as he created Volumes 3 and 4, and he's quoted as saying, "You can see his influence start to creep in here and there, but he's a larger inspirational figure to me than just his drawing style." In regards to the Fooly Cooly anime, or FLCL anime, O'Malley said that while it was an influence, it's not as much a direct influence on Scott Pilgrim as some people seem to think. And look, I'll be very honest here, folks. I am not a huge fan of anime. I had a very bad experience when I was in my early teens. I have avoided it for the most part for the rest of my life. I can appreciate the art style, but there's very, very few anime I've ever tried to read. I have not really read any manga. I am not that kind of geek. But if you like that, that's cool. I'm not going to judge. But apparently, I'm really wanting to read some of these anime based on the influence they had on Scott Pilgrim. And Scott Pilgrim is very much like a Western version of a manga. It's a great comic. So yeah. Anyway, fact three is about the film's version of Scott's band, Sex Bob-omb. As I already mentioned, Scott is the bass guitarist for Sex Bob-omb, with Scott's friend Steven Stills being the guitarist and lead singer, and Scott's ex-high school girlfriend Kim Pine being the drummer. But what many people may not know is that when it came time to shoot the Sex Bob-omb scenes for the film, Mark Webber, the actor who played Steven Stills, and Alison Pill, the actress who played Kim Pine, they never played their characters' instruments before. Now, this wasn't too much of a problem for them, as both of them actually learned to play their instruments for the film, and Alison Pill can be heard on playing drums on the official soundtrack for the film. However, the star of the film, Michael Cera, who played Scott Pilgrim, he was actually already an accomplished bass guitarist and regular guitarist, with his co-star in Juno, Elliot Page, saying that he is an incredibly talented guitarist. And so Cera actually had to dumb down his bass playing to play in a more amateurish style so as not to outshine his bandmates in Sex Bob-omb, which, for me, is actually really impressive because, speaking as a guitarist, it is a lot harder to play something badly than to play it well. I mean, you can practice and practice and practice to play something well, but if you're trying to play badly, it's tricky. So for him to actually pull it off while still having a great degree of skill in the film, that's actually pretty impressive. Now, fact number four is also about the music featured in the film, but this one involves some very careful legal maneuvering on the part of the movie studios. You see, for most of the comic, Scott is recovering from a devastating breakup from his former girlfriend, Envy Adams. This dumping happened about a year and a bit before the events of the main story, and Envy has since become a megastar in the music industry. Specifically, she's a rock star / pop star. Now, it turns out that Envy's bass player and current boyfriend, Todd Ingram, is Ramona's third evil ex, and due to being vegan, which in this universe, he has multiple psychic powers, such as telepathy and telekinesis. Now, obviously, this means that Scott has to defeat him as part of the whole defeat the seven evil exes thing, but in the film, the music used for the introduction of The Clash at Demonhead, which is Envy's band, it was actually nearly at the center of a lawsuit. You see, the song used in that scene is Black Sheep by Metric, which is an amazing song. But Brie Larson, the actress who played Envy Adams, she actually sang the vocal parts for the song in the film. Now, admittedly, she did an excellent job with that song, given that she got her start in showbiz as a pop singer. But so that performance isn't in any way in question. I love that performance. I think it's a great version of that song. The problem came when the movie studio and Metric actually argued about the version of the song that was going to be found in the official soundtrack. You see, Black Sheep is a very, very personal song for Emily Haynes, the lead singer for Metric, and the direct inspiration for Envy Adams in the comics. And at the time, while they appreciated that Envy and Envy's band was an affectionate caricature of Metric and Haynes, they did not want the Brie Larson version to be on the official soundtrack as opposed to the actual official Metric version. Now, given this song is actually pretty crucial to that scene in the film, as it's the introduction of Envy and of the third evil ex, Todd, the studio movie had to agree on conditions, otherwise Metric wouldn't allow the song to be used. But over the years, fans of the film began clamoring for the Brie Larson version to be released officially. Now, in 2020, a decade after the film was first shown in cinemas, Metric finally allowed the Brie Larson version to be released as a digital music video on the Apple Music version of the soundtrack, alongside the original version by Metric. And honestly, it's pretty different. Like, the Brie Larson version is a bit more, for want of a better term, sinister, but at the same time, they're both great songs, so I'd recommend looking it up on Spotify or on Apple Music, and definitely look up the Brie Larson version on YouTube. It's definitely worth a watch. Now, fact five is about one of the fight scenes in the film, and believe me, there are fight scenes in this film, and they're brilliantly choreographed and really well done. It's very much a video game movie in a lot of senses. Like, there's tons of gaming references. Like, there's Nintendo, there's Sega, there's all these different gaming references all in this film, and the fight scenes reflect that. They're very much almost like old school fighting game styles. But this fact is actually about how this fight scene I'm talking about is a mishmash of two fight scenes from the original comic. Now, let me explain. In the comic, Envy and Ramona have a massive fight, like physical confrontation fight, over their mutual animosity and the fact that Envy is currently dating Ramona's third evil ex, Todd, who, as I just mentioned, is the bass player for Envy's band. See, Ramona is trying to show Envy that Todd in the comic is a serial cheater and is, in fact, cheating on Envy with Lynette, the drummer of Envy's band. Now, this is not actually in the film. I want to make that very clear. That's just in the comic. Now, for her part, Envy doesn't believe that Todd's cheating on her until after the fight with Ramona and sees it for herself, but that's not the fact I'm talking about here. You see, Envy proves herself to be a very formidable opponent in combat, but as Ramona is just about to lose the advantage, Scott calls out a vital piece of information and advice in the silence: go for the back of the knee. Ramona does this, and Envy suffers, well, shall we say, an immensely powerful petit mort. If you know, you know. And, is immediately incapacitated. Now, here's where the whole mishmash thing comes in. See, in early versions of the 2010 film, Envy was actually intended to replace Roxy Richter, Ramona's fourth evil ex and the only female evil ex on the list. Now, thankfully, in my opinion at least, Envy didn't replace Roxy, but Roxy's and Envy's fight scenes were actually both condensed into one fight scene where Scott is forced to fight Roxy. Now, that's actually in the comics, but they condense both those fight scenes, Roxy versus Scott and Envy versus Ramona, into the one Scott versus Roxy fight scene. Now, the Scott versus Roxy fight scene is relatively accurate to the comics, but remember the back of the knee thing and its, well, for want of a better term, trigger response? In the film, it's Ramona who calls out that piece of advice, and it's Roxy who has that response to being touched on the back of the knee. Now, admittedly, according to Edgar Wright, who was the director and co-screenwriter of the film, the reason they couldn't film Envy's fight scene as well as Roxy's is both due to budget and time constraints, but as a big fan of the comics, I gotta say, I would have loved to have seen Envy versus Ramona on the big screen. Like, that would have been cool, given that Mary Elizabeth Winstead, the lady who played Ramona, she did an amazing amount of job. She did an incredible job with the fight training for the quite a few fight scenes. And I would have loved to have seen Captain Marvel going up against Mary Elizabeth Winstead. That would have been amazing to see on the screen. Now, fact number six about Scott Pilgrim is about the endings of both the film and the comic. You see, at the time when Edgar Wright and Michael Bacall were writing the screenplay for the 2010 film, Brian Lee O'Malley had not yet finished writing the ending to the comic series. Now, this leads to an interesting situation, as O'Malley, Wright, and Bacall have all admitted they bounced ideas off of each other regarding the ending of both the comic and the movie. In fact, O'Malley has actually stated that he honestly doesn't know who copied who in terms of the ideas for the ending of the comic and the film. However, O'Malley has also stated that the creative process of bouncing ideas off of Wright and Bacall made him change the original ending of the comic they had in mind to a much more positive one, which I, for one, am actually very happy about, because it's not a depressing end to the comic, per se. Like, it's not a sad ending, but it's a realistic ending, put it that way. I don't want to spoil too much, because it's a really, really beautiful ending, but at the same time, it's not like Disney Princess, everyone's happy and they all live happily ever after. It's not that. I want to make something very clear about the comic right now. Every single character in this comic is deeply, deeply flawed, borderline toxic in some ways, apart from the bad guys, and they're just pure evil. And so because of that, the ending is realistic. It's between two deeply flawed individuals who have only recently come to terms with how flawed they actually are and how messed up they have been in the past. And because of that, it's actually really cathartic. It's a really good ending. And I really enjoy it. So I'm very happy that O'Malley actually changed it to that ending. Because if he hadn't, I don't know what would have been, but it wouldn't have been anywhere near as good. Now, fact number seven is also about the ending in the movie, but more specifically, it shows how a screen test audience can drastically change a movie's outcome. You see, Edgar Wright shot two versions of the ending of the 2010 film. One where Scott ends up with Knives Chow and Ramona walks away, and one where Knives and Scott stay separated and Scott and Ramona end up together. Now, according to Wright, he tested both endings to a test audience, and they weren't as enthused about the first ending, the Knives and Scott ending, as they were about the second one, which is Ramona and Scott getting together. So the film's ending was actually changed, and, well, that was that. Now, I personally support the changing of the ending to the one where Ramona and Scott end up together. I think that works better from a filmmaking perspective. I think it works better from the perspective of saying reasonably true to the comics. I like that ending, is the point I'm trying to make here. But there is a sizable portion of the fan base who actually prefer the Knives and Scott ending, and if that's you, that's cool. If you want to go Knives and Scott, that's fine. I'm just saying that for me, that relationship is a bit iffy. Okay? That's all I'm saying. Now, finally, we come to fact number eight, which is about the 2023 anime Scott Pilgrim Takes Off. Now, here's the thing. According to numerous reports from different film sets, Edgar Wright is an amazingly fun director to work for. As for his past work, he directed the Cornetto trilogy, which is some of my favorite films. He got stuff like Hot Fuzz, Shaun of the Dead, The World's End. He directed one of my favorite films of all time, Baby Driver. And he also directed an unspecified amount of the first Ant-Man movie, which is, I'll admit, I didn't enjoy Ant-Man as much as some other MCU films, but it wasn't too bad. Now, this insanely positive work environment actually led to the creation of genuine friendships and relationships among all the cast and crew of Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, and an email group was actually formed with everyone involved in the film, cast and crew being included, and they stayed in contact for over a decade afterwards, and it's got some pretty big names. Now, many of the cast of that film have gone on to have very illustrious careers of their own. I've mentioned Brie Larson being Captain Marvel and Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who you might know as Mary Todd Lincoln in Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. She starred in 10 Cloverfield Lane. Most recently, she played Hera Syndulla in the TV series Ahsoka in the Star Wars universe. But you also had Brandon Routh, who played Todd Ingram, the vegan guy, who Envy's boyfriend. He played Superman in Superman Returns. He's most recently been in Geek News. He's been in The Atom in the Arrowverse. And the really big name for me was Chris Evans. Now, this is before he became Captain America. He was actually cast as Captain America the year after Scott Pilgrim came out. He played Lucas Lee, who's Ramona's second evil ex. This is like after his time in the Fantastic Four movies, which I love, And then you've got, this is right before he became Captain America. So he was a big star, not huge. Captain America became his, like, the thing he became known for. But this is, like, the role directly before that. And so a lot of the film has some really huge names in it. Like, Aubrey Plaza was in it. It had, Jason Schwartzman was in it. He's in a lot of stuff. You had tons and tons of big names in this film who went on to be megastars. And it's apparently they're all set in contact with this email list. Now, what maybe people may not know is that when Netflix reached out to Edgar Wright and Brian Lee O'Malley to make the Scott Pilgrim anime, Wright actually sent out an email in that group chat, and nearly every single person involved in the cast and crew of the 2010 film said they would jump at the chance to play those roles again. They, nearly to a man, they all came back for the roles. In fact, the only major change in the lineup of actors and actresses returning from the 2010 film is that Shota and Keita Saito, the twin actors who played Kyle and Ken Katayanagi, Ramona's fifth and sixth evil exes, declined to return. You see, the Saito brothers at the time, I don't know if they do now, but at the time when the 2010 film was being made, they did not speak any English. And that means that the majority of the scenes from the comic featured the Katayanagi twins were actually cut from the film. However, the twins were definitely featured in the anime, with both twins being voiced by Julian Kihi. I don't know how that last name is pronounced. It's spelled C-I-H-I. I know he's in the show Only Murders in the Building. I don't know him as an actor, so if I pronounce that wrong, that's entirely on me. Anyways, that's all for today. I really hope you've enjoyed this episode. It was a lot of fun for me to write and record. I honestly love this franchise. I really, really do. And it's refreshing because, well, I grew up reading comics. Like, I'm a massive fan of, like, Batman, Spider-Man, Hellboy. I grew up reading comics from a young age. My high school actually had a great comic selection, so I read stuff like V for Vendetta and Watchmen and From Hell in my spare time in high school. And I've continued collecting and reading comics to this day. And the thing I love about Scott Pilgrim is it doesn't pretend that everyone's perfect. Like, you look at Superman, he's got the morals of a Boy Scout with the powers of a god. Even Batman is a morally good character. He messes up sometimes, but he's a morally good character. Spider-Man is more relatable because he goes through stuff that everyday people have, but to that point, he's still got superpowers. Scott Pilgrim may have some powers, like it's a video game referencing thing, but to be honest, Scott Pilgrim's probably the most relatable comic I've ever read in my life. And if you're in any way a fan of anything that's relatable to 20-somethings or indie rock or anything video game and manga related, I would highly, highly recommend this comic series. I would recommend the film. The voice acting in the anime is amazing. The performances in the film are absolutely perfect for the characters. And the comic is, honestly, it's my favorite comic series of all time. I do not say that lightly, believe me. But, like, if I was picking individual comics, it's not the best. That title goes for Batman The Long Halloween or The Shadow Fires of Creation. But this is the best series that I've ever read. And I'd highly, highly recommend that if you in any way want to read against comics, start with Scott Pilgrim. It's a great entry into relatable indie comics, and I'd highly recommend it. Anyway, that's all for today. Thanks for listening to The Raven's Grove. I've been Dahi, you've been awesome, and I'll talk to you next episode. See ya.